Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Key turns. The family of RCA, which includes RCA Victor, Radio Marine, RCA Communications, and the National Broadcasting Company, combines over the coast-to-coast NBC Blue Network to bring you a full hour of entertainment from the Civic Opera House in Chicago. Today's program features a special radio tribute commemorating the 10th anniversary of Charles A. Lindbergh's solo flight to Paris. The brilliant lyric soprano, Vivian Della Chiesa. The comic monologues of Sylvia Clark. The famous Chicago a cappella choir, directed by Noble Kane, the King's Jesters, and Frank Black directing the Chicago NBC Symphony Orchestra. Mr. Black opens the program with the overture to Glinka's Russian opera, Ruslan and Ludmila. The Chicago a cappella choir has become world famous in the 7 years of its existence. The organization was founded in 1930 by Noble Kane, using the city's outstanding non-professional singers. The members sing because they like to sing. The magic key of RCA turns to the Chicago a cappella choir. The choir sings Noble Kane's transcription of Tchaikovsky's Oh, blessed are they. On this date, 10 years ago, few people had ever heard of Charles Augustus Lindbergh. The whole world was soon to ring with his name. For on May 20th, 1927, Lindbergh made the first solo flight across the Atlantic. John B. Kennedy is here on the stage of the Chicago Civic Opera House, ready to hold shortwave interviews with some of the men who played important parts in Lindbergh's historic flight. The magic key of RCA turns to John B. Kennedy.
Good afternoon, all. 10 years ago, a young man stepped into the cockpit of a monoplane at Roosevelt Field, New York. He flew into the blue tomb of the sky to turn what seemed imminent tragedy into startling triumph. He was and is Charles A. Lindbergh, an airmail pilot from Minnesota, whose father had been a member of Congress, whose mother was a teacher in Detroit. Other more elaborate flights were in preparation then for a race across the Atlantic to win a reward of $25,000 for the first nonstop flyer to Paris. But Lindbergh flew alone, yet with skill and courage and the high heart of youthful ambition for his companions. They called him the flying fool before his flight. But when, after perilous passage, he brought down his plane in Le Bourget, Paris, and announced simply, "I am Charles Lindbergh," the world ecstatically acclaimed the greatest feat of heroism of a generation. Today, the magic key of RCA celebrates Colonel Lindbergh's achievement. To fly with the instancy of radio in a few moments, the dangerous route across the Atlantic Ocean that took Colonel Lindbergh more than 30 hours. Clipping fleecy clouds above Chicago at this moment is an airman who knew Lindbergh well. Chief Pilot E.L. Sloniger of the American Airlines. Pilot Sloniger succeeded Colonel Lindbergh on his old mail route between Chicago and St. Louis. And after the Colonel's spectacular achievement, Sloniger was one of other companions to be with Lindbergh when he flew the mails again. Contacting Pilot Sloniger flying above us, we ask him, "Are you ready to come in, Sloniger? Are you ready to come in? Sloniger? Are you ready to come in, Sloniger? I can't hear you. Come in, Sloniger. Are you there, Sloniger? See if you can hear my first question. How long had Colonel Lindbergh served that mail route between St. Louis and Chicago? Sloniger? Are you there, Sloniger? Can you hear me now? I could hear the plane outside the opera house here, but I can't seem to hear Sloniger. Neither can you, I suppose. Are you there, Sloniger? Well, I think we'll hop from Mr. Sloniger, who is cruising around Chicago, to, do you think he'll come in now? Sloniger, will you answer this question if you can hear this one? Was it during the period between April 15 and 1926, in 1926 and February or March 1927, this period of mail service, that Colonel Lindbergh became a parachute jumper and joined the parachute jumpers organization called the Caterpillar Club?
Well, substituting for Mr. Sloniger, Mr. Kennedy, I'll answer that question. Lindbergh was a parachute jumper before he knew much about flying. He left Lincoln to join the barnstorming troop as jumper and quit barnstorming in 1925 to go into the Army. While in the Army, he joined the Caterpillar Club. All this was before he flew the airmail.
Well, I'm glad you, a friend of Sloniger's, came in time, Captain Smith. How did time for that 276-mile flight between Chicago and St. Louis in this day compare with later schedules and with today's?
The time was 3 hours and 15 minutes. 2 years later, it was cut to 2 hours, then to 1 hour and 25 minutes. The Chicago-St. Louis trip is around 1 hour and 31 minutes.
What type of ship was used then, what later, and what do you use now?
De Havilland was used then, later trimotor Fords and Fokkers. Then a Vultee, which made it in 1 hour and 29 minutes. Today a Douglas is used, making it in 1 hour and 31 minutes.
Well, you being so well acquainted with Colonel Lindbergh's buddies, what's their opinion? Do they think the Colonel Lindbergh has changed now that he's celebrated?
Well, Slim, as they call him, is absolutely unchanged. He'd rather sit around with old cronies and chew the fat about the old days than lunch with royalty.
Thank you very much for pinch-hitting for Sloniger. Now we're going to try to take you to Roosevelt Field, New York, where Lindbergh's plane, The Spirit of St. Louis, was rolled out for its epic flight. K.J. Boddicker, 10 years ago the mechanic who tuned up The Spirit of St. Louis, now assistant sales manager of the Wright Aeronautical Corporation, he will speak from the very spot whence he saw Lindbergh leave, or will try to speak. How long, Mr. Boddicker, did it take to tune up The Spirit of St. Louis for the flight?
Well, it didn't take very long, as we all jumped to the job as soon as the ship was housed in a hangar now used by Waco Sales of New York after Lindbergh's one-stop flight from San Diego.
What was your fueling capacity, gas and oil?
By actual count, 460 gallons of gasoline and 40 gallons of oil were put aboard.
Did Colonel Lindbergh personally supervise the fueling operation?
Yes, he did, more or less. While he didn't bother us during the process of fueling, nor try to hurry us, we could tell by his actions that he was very anxious to get started, but at the same time, he kept his weather eye cocked to make sure there was no slip-up.
Do you recall anything he said at the time?
Well, he did have a short conversation because the engine was not turning up to its usual RPM. It was about 50 RPM shy. We checked the engine once more and could find nothing wrong with it, and I told him I believed it was due to the heavy atmosphere. We had never run the engine up before at that hour of the day or under similar weather conditions, and that amount of variation was normal under varying atmospheric conditions. Slim's reply was, "What do you say? Let's try it." And Slim's try ended up in Paris.
What was Colonel Lindbergh's food supply for the flight?
A few chocolate bars, thermos bottle of tea or coffee, and about a half a dozen sandwiches.
What were the Colonel's last words before taking off?
The Colonel's last words before taking off were, as I remember, "So long, Ed," meaning Edward Mulligan, who actually started the engine, and "So long, Bodie."
And what were your own emotions as you watched The Spirit of St. Louis soar from the flying field?
As the plane disappeared in the mist, I sort of crumpled into the seat of my car where I had been watching the takeoff from the running board. And believe it or not, big ox that I am, tears came into my eyes and I had the feeling of sending a brother into the unknown. And I don't believe any of us slept a wink until we heard that he had landed at Le Bourget.
Thank you, Mr. Boddicker. Over in Paris, France, on the very spot at Le Bourget, where Colonel Lindbergh landed on a night packed with excitement and the roar of the crowd in jubilation and youth triumphant. There on that very spot is one man who carried the tired but smiling Lindbergh on his shoulders, a new world's hero. He is Mr. Delage, waiting in Paris, France. Mr. Delage, you were one of three people who first greeted Colonel Lindbergh when he stepped out of his plane, The Spirit of St. Louis. That historic night at Le Bourget 10 years ago...
I was, Mr. Kennedy.
Won't you tell us something about that night?
Gladly, for I recall vividly the hours when, with 200,000 Frenchmen, I waited anxiously for news of Lindbergh. Anxiously because we remember the sad fate of Nungesser and Colley. But the silver plane dropped out of the night at 10:19 p.m. And Lindbergh made a perfect landing here at Le Bourget.
200,000 Frenchmen rushed to welcome him?
They burst through barriers and police to welcome Lindbergh. De Troyat, then a sergeant and now a great pilot, well known in America, and I managed to rescue him from the excited crowd and get him into the pilot's room of Air Union.
Was he safe there?
Windows and doors were locked, but to conceal him from the crowd, I gave him my pilot's coat. In this disguise and with the help of Colonel Weiss, we took him across the airport grounds in my automobile to buildings reserved for military aviation, where a quickly assembled guard rendered him military honors.
What happened then?
Colonel Lindbergh asked us to advise his mother and asked whether any ships had signaled his presence since he carried no radio. He was also concerned about the safety of his barograph.
And then, Mr. Delage?
Ambassador Herrick finally reached Le Bourget through the crowds, congratulated Lindbergh, and asked us to drive him to the ambassador's house by back street to avoid the crowd. We showed Lindbergh enthusiastic people snatching newspapers from each other to read about his arrival. Lindbergh simply said that was of no importance to him. At the Arc de Triomphe, we told Lindbergh that the unknown soldier was buried there, and he stopped the car, got out, and stood bareheaded for a brief instant. With motorcycle police escort, we reached the embassy about 2 a.m., where Lindbergh was at last able to rest.
Thank you, Mr. Delage. Now we have contact with Pilot Sloniger. Are you there, Sloniger? Come in. Come in, Sloniger. Well, he signaled a moment or two ago that he wanted to pay a little tribute to his old buddy, Colonel Limber. But I suppose that he won't be able to do it now, ladies and gentlemen, as the time is very limited and we must proceed with the magic key, which has just turned in memory to some of the stimulating moments of the Lindbergh epic, the first one-man conquest of the sea by air. In that single act, Lindbergh won more than fame and fortune. He won again as a living testament, man's supreme role, as master of whatever he wills to be. That was his task for himself. It remains his inspiration to us.
There's so many people that we must please, and we're always changing those keys.
Chicago at the moment is intrigued by the tuneful rhythms of some young men who are noted for their individual style of close harmony and who play almost any given musical instrument. The magic key of RCA turns to America's biggest little band, the King's Jesters.
In the spring, mosquitoes sing and wink for no good reason. Little worms get down to terms, for it's their mating season. Something lights on one and bites and causes one to cuss. But what care we, because you see, there ain't no flies on us. Oh, the flea flew in the flue, and the fly out flew the flea. But I don't care, it's their affair, as long as you love me. And a baby bee buzz by, be bye bye baby bee. For what's the dip, how come a riff, as long as you love me. Now Cupid with cupidity pulled back his bow and shot. Not was shot, and I was not, so I got shot, and thanks a lot. He who has his, but he who who's he? I guess that's not so hot, so what? As long as you love me, oh, as long as you love me.
Boy, oh boy, is this thing a tongue twister?
Oh, that's no tongue twister, George.
You mean,
well, you want to hear a tongue twister?
Sure, have you got a tongue twister?
Sure.
All right, let her go. If a hottentot tot was taught to talk air, the tot could totter. Should the hottentot tot be taught to say ought or not, or what ought to be taught? If the hoot and the toot was taught by a hottentot tutor, should the hottentot tutor get hot? If the hottentot tot would hoot and toot if the hottentot tutor?
What, John, that's a wonderful thing.
Why, that's marvelous. Why, I never heard anything like that in my life.
Wait a minute, what did he say?
Darn if I know.
Oh, the flea flew in the flue, and the fly out flew the flea. But I don't care, it's their affair, as long as you love me. Oh, as long as you love me.
Close your sleepy eyes, my little buckaroo, while the light of western skies is shining down on you. And don't you know it's time for bed, another day is through. So go to sleep, my little buckaroo. Don't you realize, my little buckaroo, it was from the little acorn that the oak tree grew. And please remember that your dad was once a kid like you. So go to sleep, my little buckaroo. Ooh, soon you're gonna ride the range like grown-up cowboys do. And now it's time that you were rounding up a dream or two. Good night, sleep tight.
Everybody is jamming. Oh, high, it makes your temperature rise.
way up to the sky. And then it all goes right down to your toes. A marvelous jam band gets you in the groove, and your knees begin to move, and before you know it, you're jamming. Take your highbrow ballet music and scram. What we want's a session of jam.
Beethoven?
No, never.
What? Never?
Well, hardly ever.
Better.
What we want is a session of jam.
Radio listeners have learned through experience that when stirring events take place, NBC will bring them thrilling accounts. NBC was first to bring you actual broadcasts from on board the Zeppelin Hindenburg during the mighty airship's maiden flight to America in the summer of 1936. When the eyes of the world were centered last week on the Hindenburg tragedy, NBC was first to bring you an eyewitness account directly from the flying field. NBC was again first when Dick Merrill landed at Croydon, England, after his flight across the Atlantic. 4 minutes after the landing, Merrill was talking to NBC listeners in America over shortwave radio. So keep your dial tuned to your local NBC station. Listen to outstanding firsts in radio, whether they're in the field of news, education, or entertainment. RCA, opening the door to a world of entertainment. Today's program, originating on the stage of the Civic Opera House in Chicago, features the lyric soprano of Vivian Della Chiesa. A special Lindbergh anniversary tribute, the comic monologues of Sylvia Clark, the famous Chicago a cappella choir, the King's Jesters, and Frank Black directing the Chicago NBC Symphony. Frank Black, General Musical Director of the NBC, the Chicago NBC Symphony Orchestra, and the Chicago a cappella choir in the prelude to Mascagni's opera Iris, the inspiring Hymn to the Sun.
loss turned out to be Chicago's gain in the case of Sylvia Clark, the pert little girl who talks so that others may laugh. Miss Clark was born in Jaffa, but she came to America when 1 year old. She's been here ever since, except for stage jaunts around the world and not forgetting Broadway. Despite all her travels, the little comedienne is now at home in Chicago. So don't take her seriously when she begins to talk about going away in her monologue called Departure at the Train. The magic key of RCA turns to Sylvia Clark.
Come on, Mama, hurry up, Effie. You'll never make it. It's 1 o'clock already and the train leaves exactly 3. Mama, 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 will you stick to me? You'll get lost. Alfred, you get the porter. I'll pay the taxi. Never mind. I'll get the porter and you pay the taxi. Come on, everybody. Now, where's the porter? Now, where can I get a porter? Wouldn't you think they'd have a... Oh, well, I guess we can carry the baggage and save 5 cents. Now, you take that one, Ella. No, I'll take that one. No, she'll take that one. No, he'll take that one. No, no... Oh, never mind. Leave them there. I'll take them all. Never mind. Now, Essie, have you got the magazine? Now, where's the candy? I did not have the candy. Mama, have you got the candy? Bree, did you get the candy? Lena, did you get the candy? Say, listen, who has the peanut brittle? Where? Now, well, who put that candy in my hand? Can you imagine? I had it all the time. Isn't that a crimsalum? A crimsalum? Oh, follow me and you'll be all right. Excuse me, mister. Is this the way to the Syracuse train? 1 o'clock daylight savings time? 2 o'clock. Why, where's the 1 o'clock? Oh, the 1 o'clock leaves at 2 o'clock? Oh, the 2 o'clock leaves at 1 o'clock? The 1 o'clock leaves at 3 o'clock? Hey, what do you have to do? Get an adding machine to catch a train nowadays? What I'd like to know, missus, is the train leave at 1, 2, or 3 o'clock? Make up your mind. Huh? The train leaves right behind the engine. That's the answer. Get nervous prosperity before you leave town. A guy with a single-track mind should never work in a railroad station. I guess I don't know what to do. Oh, well, wait a minute. I'll ask this fella. He has a high forehead. Excuse me, mister. Would this be the way the Syracuse train... I say, Syracuse, are we going the right direction? Huh? Oh, is that so? Oh, you don't? Oh, well, that's all right. No harm done. Hmm. 18 million people in the depot. I got to pick out a guy that don't speak English. Well, Syracuse, anyway, follow me. It must be someplace. Car 34, right this way. Hurry up, car 34. Just follow me. Here it is. Essie, come on. Get on. Hurry up. Never mind. You'll kiss Mama when you get back. Get on. You only got an hour and a half. Hurry up. Get on. Yeah, go get a seat by the window. Yeah. Go get a seat by the window. We'll talk to you from outside the train. Come on, Mama. Come down to the window. Come on, Ella. Come down to the window. Come on, Frida. Come down to the window. You two, come down to the window. Pull up your stocking, Mama. Come on down to the window. There she is. Yoo-hoo. Essie. She sees us. You're by the window. Stay there. She's by the window. She's by the window. Our own flesh and blood is by the window. Look, she knows us. Essie, you know who this is? It's our mama. She knows your mama right through the window. She looks better already. The trip is doing you good. Yes, yeah, so is the railroad. She can't hear me. Open the window. Open the window. Don't be afraid. You paid for your ticket. Open the window. Can't open the window? Can't open the window. Poor kid, she's weak. Never mind. You'll be strong when you get back. Don't forget to take your pills. Pills. No, watch my mouth. Pills. Tablets. Now, look, I'll spell it for you. P-I-L-L-S. Tablets. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Not the ones in the pink box. The ones in the blue box. The blue. The blue. The... My goodness, you have to explode to tell her anything. It's terrible. There should be a hole in the window. Have a good time, and if anyone dies, we'll let you know. Yeah, and write to Aunt Bertha. Yeah. Tell her you hope her gallstones get better. Gallstones. Gallstones. Gall... Yeah, you got them. No, she's got them. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, tell her you hope her gallstones get... No, not bigger. I said better. Oh, my goodness, bigger. She's crazy. Don't push your nose against the window. It looks a mile long. She looked like Uncle Albert. You look like Uncle Albert. Uncle Al. Yeah, the nose was born and the rest of the body grew on afterwards. She's crazy. Drop us a line when you get there so we know you weren't killed or anything. Killed. Look. My goodness, I nearly killed myself. Essie, have you got your lunch? Well, eat your bananas before they get black. Yeah, and when you come back... What's that? Oh, there they go, the train's moving. Goodbye, Essie. Goodbye. Come back with a little meat on you. Get fat now. Yeah, but only on your elbow. Goodbye. Goodbye. Have a good time. Come on, everybody. Wave. Goodbye. Wave hard, will you? Goodbye. Oops, excuse me, Mama. I didn't mean to knock you down. Goodbye. Pick Mama up. Goodbye. Come on, everybody. Wave. Wave with one hand while you're getting up, Mama. Goodbye. Never mind, I'm waving double. Goodbye. Look at the dear old man with the beard. He thinks I'm waving at him. His beard's hanging out the window. Look, it's waving back at me. That's right, Grandpa. Swing it. Goodbye, Essie. Have a good time. You too, Grandpa. Goodbye. Goodbye. Isn't it wonderful? Why? You see that? I got her on that train, didn't I? Just as easy as falling off a log. Not that I ever fell off a log, you know, but... Say, I forgot to ask what time the train gets to Syracuse. I'll find out. Hey, Porter, what time does that train get to Syracuse? I said that train just leaving. What time does it reach Syracuse? What? It don't go to Syracuse. It's a Carolina train. Oh, good glory, she's on the wrong train. Essie.
Since today's Magic Key of RCA program originates in Chicago, it is with pleasure that we present Chicago's own lyric soprano. Though still in her early 20s, she has already appeared as a prima donna with the Chicago City Opera Company. As is the case with several of the younger opera stars, she represents another example of radio's contribution to the best in music. Radio gave her first big chance, and she is now a featured singer on NBC Networks. The Magic Key of RCA turns to Vivian Della Chiesa. For her first selection, Miss Della Chiesa sings Tales from the Vienna Woods by Johann Strauss. Thank you. For an encore, Vivian Della Chiesa sings Butzi Pesce's Nina Querida. The Magic Key is particularly happy to be in Chicago today because the family of RCA has so many pleasant associations with the prosperous Middle Western area. Chicago is the center of NBC broadcasting activities for this section of our country. The 40-odd Warner Brothers theaters here in Chicago, for example, either have installed or are installing the latest type of RCA photophone high-fidelity equipment for the enjoyment of their patrons. Chicago's leading broadcasting stations use RCA Victor broadcasting equipment. Here are located the great RCA Victor recording studios for the Middle West. The major airlines operating out of Chicago all carry RCA aviation radio equipment. RCA police radio equipment is used by the police departments of Chicago and of Chicago Heights.
two new high-speed Southern Pacific trains operating between Chicago and Los Angeles are RCA radio equipped. Many Chicago schools, hospitals, and hotels are equipped for sound or radio by RCA. In your own city or town, you will find a similar situation. Among radio listeners everywhere, you will find a rapidly mounting preference for RCA Victor radios. The radios which complete the perfect chain from the broadcasting studio to receiving set. That's why not only Middle Western radio listeners, but the whole country is going RCA all the way.
Thank you.
Frank Black and the Chicago NBC Symphony Orchestra have just played the entrance and processional from Carl Goldmark's opera, The Queen of Sheba. Members of the family of RCA, which includes RCA Victor, RCA Communications, Radio Marine, and the National Broadcasting Company, invite you to tune in again at this same time next Sunday for a full hour of entertainment celebrating the homecoming of the Philadelphia Orchestra. Charles O'Connell will conduct, and the program will feature the Choral Society of the University of Pennsylvania, organ solos by Charles M. Courbois, and Helen Jepson as soloist. The Great Philadelphia Orchestra, directed by Eugene Normandy and Jose Iturbe, is now on a nationwide tour under the auspices of RCA Victor. During the coming week, the symphony organization will give concerts in the following cities: Monday, Toronto; Tuesday, Montreal; Wednesday, Northampton, Massachusetts; Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in White Plains, New York; and returning to Philadelphia on next Sunday for the special Magic Key of RCA program. Cross speaking for all the services of the Radio Corporation of America.
And Charles Lyon saying that in radio, it's RCA all the way.
This has been a Blue Network presentation of the National Broadcasting Company.